bring a cup of water up with me, and yeah, so in case in the middle, I need to run all the way down there and get a styrofoam cup, and this is the only cup I had in my office. So I have, let's see, Westbrook and Serge Ibaka from the Thunder with me tonight. That's a souvenir cup from an Oklahoma City Thunder game there, so it's all I had. All right, Revelation chapter 3, verses 7 through 13 is where we're going to be tonight. This is number 6 of 7 in our time looking at the letters to the seven churches of Asia that we find Revelation chapter 2 and 3. So next week we'll talk about the church in Laodicea, and that will close up our series. So let me just kind of give you a little bit of background of the church in Philadelphia. First of all, Philadelphia is not in Pennsylvania, not the Philadelphia we're talking about here, although a letter to the church in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania would be interesting. This Philadelphia is 28 miles southeast of Sardis. So one of the letters is to the church in Sardis. It's the youngest of the seven cities. It was founded in 150 BC by King Attalus, who was nicknamed Philadelphus. Apparently, he was the lover of a brother. There may have been one of his biological brothers that he appreciated greatly, that he loved, that was connected with. And so that's where we get this name for this city, Philadelphia. And we talk about often the city here in the United States, that it is the city of brotherly love. There was an earthquake there in 17 AD, and I mean, it was a really huge earthquake that brought devastation to the city. It was rebuilt later on with the help of Tiberius. Tiberius did all kinds of great things in that part of the world, and one of the things that he did was to help, probably financially, providing workers to do that work, rebuilt the city of Philadelphia. So it was a tumultuous place in many ways because of the natural disaster of the earthquake they faced. There were also many aftershocks from that earthquake, and so it really brought a lot of destruction to that city. One of the things we notice in this letter to mention right off the bat is that there are no complaints in this letter. In the majority of the other letters that we read in Revelation 2 and 3, there is some sort of rebuke that Jesus brings to the people. There's going to be a great rebuke in the letter that we look at next week with the church in Laodicea. Remember, you are lukewarm. But in this letter, there is no complaint, no rebuke. It's only words of blessing and praise for how the people are living out their faith. Let's go ahead and jump into this. I'm going to read the whole letter, verses 7 through 13, and then we'll kind of break it down and unpack this letter together. To the angel of the church in Philadelphia, write, "These are the words of him who is holy and true, who holds the key of David. What he opens, no one can shut, and what he shuts, no one can open. I know your deeds. See, I have placed before you an open door that no one can shut. I know that you have little strength, yet you have kept my word and have not denied my name. I will make those who are of the synagogue of Satan, who claim to be Jews, though they are not, but are liars, I will make them come and fall down at your feet and acknowledge that I have loved you. Since you have kept my command to endure patiently, I will also keep you from the hour of trial that is going to come on the whole world to test the inhabitants of the earth. I am coming soon. Hold on to what you have, so that no one will take your crown. The one who is victorious, I will make a pillar in the temple of my God. Never again will they leave it. I will write on them the name of my God and the name of the city of my God, the New Jerusalem, which is coming down out of heaven from God. And I will also write on them my new name. Whoever has ears, let them hear what the Spirit says to the churches. That is the letter from Jesus Christ himself to the people. So it starts off in verse 7. These are the words of him who is holy and true, who holds the key of David. So this letter is coming from the one who speaks true words. He is himself holy and true, and he holds the key of David. What does that mean, that he holds the key of David? Well, we know that this Messiah is in the line of David, and so he has that kind of power and authority. He is of the Davidic line. That is Jesus himself. He was the king that was prophesied about in books like Isaiah and Ezekiel and Amos. There was a king that was coming in the line of David, and Jesus is that king, and so he holds the key of David. It says then, what he opens, no one can shut, and what he shuts, no one can open. So again, we see the authority that this king has. One thing that might be going on here, sort of beneath the surface in some ways, is that when it says that he has the key to open this door, and only he can open it, and no one else can shut it, perhaps he's talking about what was happening for God's people. At first, it was the Jews that were God's people. And then we know after Jesus comes on the scene, it's going to be God's people is going to include both Jews and Gentiles. That way was opened through Jesus Christ himself, and specifically the cross and resurrection. So perhaps that's what that means there. It's through Jesus that the doors are open to include all people through faith in him. Verse 8 now. I know your deeds. See, I have placed before you an open door that no one can shut. I know that you have little strength, yet you have kept my word and have not denied my name. One of the themes in this letter is the enduring faith of the Christians in Philadelphia. Apparently, they were facing strong persecution. And in the face of that persecution, like with several of the other churches that are mentioned here in Revelation 2 and 3, they have remained true to the name of Jesus, and they are to be commended for that strong faith in the face of opposition. And it says there, I have placed before you an open door. Even though persecution has come their way, there are still opportunities and avenues for the gospel to be shared. The door is still open. Now, I think this is very powerful. Perhaps in the face of persecution or opposition, the people would think, well, the door has been shut to the gospel. Surely, with the difficulties that come with living a life in line with the truth of the gospel, with the persecution that comes with that, with the trouble that comes with that, surely this preaching will be stamped out. But in truth, as Jesus opens the door, even in persecution, the name of Jesus can be proclaimed. It can have power Jesus can have power to call people to himself, no matter the situation. I think it's important for us to remember, even today, that Jesus places before us an open door, all kinds of opportunities. Who knows where the gospel is going to take us? Who knows what kind of power the gospel can have in people's life? There is still an open door before us to preach and to teach and to witness and to proclaim to the good news of Jesus Christ. An open door means good news, and the opposition can't close that door. Verse 9, I will make those who are of the synagogue of Satan, so this is the opposition here, who claim to be Jews, though they are not, but are liars, I will make them come and fall down at your feet and acknowledge that I have loved you. So, I think that these people, and with the help of scholars, probably referring to those who, like Paul, opposes with the churches of Galatia, these Judaizing teachers that were saying to become Christians, one had to follow the Mosaic law as well as following Jesus and doing things such as practicing circumcision. So they were going against the freedom that was found in the truth of the gospel. And so, in the strongest of terms here, Jesus says about them that they are a synagogue of Satan. Of course, as we've talked about several times, Satan is opposed to God's will and way. And when anybody decides that they are going to go against the truth of the gospel, then they are choosing to partner with the evil one. So there is no, and I think this is so important, this is not PC, right? These people are opposed to the truth of the gospel, synagogue of Satan. That's not very PC to talk that way, but it's the truth. And sometimes it's important that we call things as they truthfully are. Says about them, and imagine the hope and confidence and joy this would have brought to these Christians. It says, I will make them come and fall down at your feet and acknowledge that I have loved you. At some point, these people that are opposing them, persecuting them, perhaps even putting them to death, these people are going to come and fall flat on their face and recognize that victory comes through Jesus Christ alone, and they missed it. Yet the Christians have found it. Verse 10, since you have kept my command to endure patiently, I will also keep you from the hour of trial that is going to come on the whole world to test the inhabitants of the earth. Was this further persecution that was going to take place under the Roman emperor? Perhaps that's what's taking place there. Perhaps this is just talking about the church at Philadelphia, and even us today are continually living in the last hour. Like we talked about this morning, Paul talked about a present crisis that was going on. Perhaps the persecution that was taking place, or just the brokenness of our world might signify the last hour. But no matter what the last hour is, note that Jesus says to these people that they can have hope and confidence that they will be victorious in Him. That's the truth. And that is what is going to bring them strength in the face of the difficulties that they'll face. They're commended for enduring patiently. There it is again. They're standing strong even in the face of difficulty. And then verse 11. All kinds of hope. I am coming soon. I am coming to be with you. I am coming to bring you the victory that you have been awaiting. Hold on to what you have so that no one will take your crown. Hold tightly to what you have. So, I don't know about you all, but I love tubing behind like a boat. I don't know if any of you have ever done that before, but it is so much fun to do that. But when I read this verse, I kind of got this picture in my mind of times that I've been tubing with my dad. My dad is the most calm, just gracious, nice man until he gets behind the wheel of a boat and he just goes crazy, especially when I am on the other end of the rope being tubed. He becomes a maniac. And so we'd be going around the lake and he's driving the boat and he's just taking it fast, whipping it back and forth. So I'm going in and out of the wake and he's trying to flip me. And so it's kind of like this little battle that's going on. He's driving the boat trying to throw me, and I'm just thinking, I'm not going to be thrown off of this tube. And everything that I have, I'm gripping that tube. I'm like, just bring it, Dad. Try to get me off of this tube. There's been a few times where the tube has just hit the wake and just flipped. And I've been holding on just for dear life. One time it was upside down. I was just sucking all kinds of water and could not have been a good situation. But when I read this about holding on, that's kind of the picture I got in mind of just holding on to this tube, holding on with everything. And imagine this letter coming to a people that have been hurt because of their faith. And a letter comes from Christ himself, one who knows a thing or two about persecution. In this, they're sitting in maybe a house church in this group, and someone comes in that reads the letter, and he says, this letter is from Jesus. He begins to read the letter and reads what we have already read, and then he gets to verse 11. Again, this is coming from Jesus himself. He says, I am coming soon. Hold on to what you have so that no one will take your crown. And he continues, the one who is victorious, I will make a pillar in the temple of my God. Never again will they leave it. Notice the words of blessing, hope, and promise here. I will write on them the name of my God and the name of the city of my God, the New Jerusalem, which is coming down out of heaven from my God. And I will also write on them my new name. Hope and confidence, even in the face of persecution. He says there, hold on. Remember what Paul said to Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 4? Let's turn there and read that really quickly. In 2 Timothy chapter 4, this is coming toward the end of Paul's life. And he says this. Notice the parallel message in 2 Timothy chapter 4 and what we just read there in Revelation chapter 3. It says, starting in verse 6, for I am already being poured out like a drink offering, and the time for my departure is near. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Now there is in store for me the crown of righteousness. Remember, that's what the message was to the church at Philadelphia. There is a crown awaiting you. Hold on. Which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day, and not only to me, but also to all who have longed for his appearing. Hold on. There's a crown waiting for you. You will dwell in the presence of God. It's as if you will be a pillar in his temple, continually dwelling in the presence of the Almighty. So someone wrote this. I want you to think about this for just a moment. He wrote, when it is hard to be a Christian, it is easy. When it is easy to be a Christian, it is hard. I'm going to read that again. Allow that to soak in. When it is hard to be a Christian, it is easy. When it is easy to be a Christian, it is hard. I think for this church in Philadelphia, one thing we would say is it's hard to be a Christian. Their life was on the line for their faith. But in the struggle, in the opposition, you'd have to imagine that they would have remained steadfast. They would have had to have remained steadfast in their belief that Jesus was the one that was going to bring them victory. It was very clear to them what their aim was, what their ambition was, what their purpose was. We live in a different time. Yes, there's persecution that folks face, and we know there are parts of the world that are facing more persecution than other parts of the world. But in a society like ours, you have to wonder if that latter part of that statement rings all the more true. When it is easy to be a Christian, it is hard. I think words like what we see to the church in Philadelphia need to soak deeply into our hearts. Remembering that our confidence comes in Jesus Christ and that He will bring us the victory. One more time, verse 11. I am coming soon, Jesus says. Hold on to what you have so that no one will take your crown. If there's anybody here tonight that needs the prayers of this assembly, We'd be so glad to pray with you. If there's anybody here tonight that wants to put on Jesus in baptism, whatever need that you have, you can come forward as we stand and sing.